Some in audio from book, Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, Stephen M. Greer. Introduction, in April of 2004, about 25 people gathered at our country home in Albemarle County, Virginia, not far from Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. The purpose was for me to provide an oral history, over the course of a week, of the events of my life. This book is the result of that gathering. To be honest, this book is released with more than a little trepidation. It reveals personal experiences and events that frankly seem incredible. Even reading through the transcript of the tapes was at times a tearful and emotionally difficult experience. And I know that much of it can be used to attack me personally. But it is time for you to know, why did an emergency physician who had been chairman of a busy earl leave his career to get out to the world the information that we are not alone? What had I personally experienced, from childhood onwards, that gave me the knowledge of cosmic cultures, cosmic consciousness and a glimpse of the wondrous future that awaits humanity? What are the new energy and propulsion technologies that can give us a new world, free of pollution, poverty and conflict? What is the nexus where mind, space, time and matter all come together? And how might this be used technologically by an advanced civilization? What does the blueprint of the next 500,000 years of human civilization on Earth look like, and how can we transition to that time? What did I find, and experience, as I met with heads of state, CIA officials, billionaires and covert operatives who in turns are desperate to maintain the secrecy and yet pray for relief from the black box they have nailed shut around them? Who has been keeping this knowledge secret, and most importantly, why? This book addresses all this, and more. It is my own disclosure. Having founded and led the Disclosure Project, I feel it is time that the millions of people who follow our work know the truth about how I got here, and what I have found. I do not expect the general reader to accept all of this, or perhaps any of it. I expect nothing in fact. It is the truth as I have found it, and this is my heartfelt effort to share that truth. I hope you find some meaning in this sharing from my heart and mind. A meeting I had with a senior general at the Pentagon a few years ago illustrates the gravity of the situation. I had been asked by this general, who at the time was head of a major intelligence operation in the Pentagon, to brief him and some of his staff on a UFO issue. As our military advisor and I waited in the general's reception room, we noticed a female officer looking up from her papers at us, curiously. Finally, she asked if I was Drive Greer, and I said yes. She then proceeded to explain that they were very excited about the briefing and that she and her colleagues had drawn straws to see who could be in attendance. Apparently, only one officer from her office could be present. We were escorted into the general's conference room, and some time into the briefing this general said, "Well, I have no doubt that what you are sharing is true, but I have made inquiries through channels in my agency and nobody can tell me anything. In fact, all I have gotten is this." He then went over to a bookshelf and took a small ET doll down, and held it up for all to see. He said, "This is all I have gotten, ridicule, for inquiring about this through channels." I then explained that the CIA director and other high officials had similar experiences when they made inquiries into the subject. This senior general then told me a disturbing and exquisitely personal story. When he was young, his father had discovered a corrupt enterprise and conspiracy in the government that was deeply disturbing, but nobody would listen to him. It was a matter of enormous importance, but even the general admitted he just thought his father was a crook. Eventually, his father committed suicide, or was murdered and made to look like a suicide, over the matter. Then the general said, "It wasn't until I got into this position at the Pentagon that I realized the old man was right." Until the general was confronted with the truth as a high official in the Pentagon, he never believed his own father. So how can I expect you to believe me? All I can do is share with you the truth as I know it, and the rest is up to you. A few comments on the book. It is not a written book, but merely an edited transcript of over 45 hours of audio tape that were created in April of 2004 during my oral presentations at our farm. I ask that the reader forgive any errors or editing oversights. This book should be viewed as an oral history, transcribed and edited into a narrative. I had no notes or text as I made these oral presentations. Between 1991 and 1995, I kept a diary, via transcribed audio tape, that was over 2,000 pages just up to that time. Clearly this book, which encompasses experiences that span half a century, can only reflect the major highlights and lessons gleaned over that time. It is by no means meant to be all inclusive or recall all the information conveyed to me by thousands of conversations and meetings with covert contacts within the shadow government. Many of the names of these covert operatives are changed or abbreviated. However, the original tapes and transcripts, which are in multiple secure locations, contain all of the names, corporations and entities involved with these illegal clandestine operations and will be released, if needed, at a later time. Also, this book is not a recapitulation or even summary of the extensive documentation which exists in my two prior books. The reader should refer to the extensive case, files and ET contact experiences of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, XETI, contained in the book Extraterrestrial Contact, The Evidence and Implications. Moreover, a nearly 600-page book of government documents and DRAN, scripts of over 60 top, secret witness testimonies to official government projects and events is available in Disclosure. These books may be obtained at www.disclosureproject.org. It is time for one chapter in human history to close and another to open. Do we have the courage to embrace this new world, the hallmarks of which are universal peace, enlightenment, and a genuinely high-technology civilization on Earth that is sustainable for thousands of years? The retrograde forces that are attempting to hijack humanity to a time of war in space, global destruction, environmental ruin and cultural insanity must be supplanted, through the courageous acts of others, with an entirely new way of being. It is time for you to know, and for all of us to act. For it is only through the collective actions of those who yearn for the good future that awaits humanity that we can leap across the abyss of impending destruction and secure a world ready to take her place among the cultures of the cosmos, enlightened and at peace. Stephen M. Greer, M.D., Albemarle County, Virginia. The 1st of February 2006. Author's note. This story is told in three parts. The first of these illuminates the events that set the stage for all to follow. It covers my childhood through early adult life, up to 1990. The second traces the years from 1990 to the present day. During this time, we formed the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, the Disclosure Project, and Space Energy Access Systems. The third part moves into the future, gazing into a time when the fulfillment of the promise of humanity will be realized, a time that will endure for 500,000 years. In order to first give you a frame of reference, I'll share some important statistics. In 1980, the world community eradicated smallpox off the face of the Earth. The World Health Organization predicts that by the end of 2006, we will reach the last remote villages of Africa and Asia and we will wipe out polio. These are accomplishments that should bring much gratification to us all as citizens of this world. Yet, it is with restrained joy that I celebrate these feats. Why? Because, sadly, by the time you read the first chapter of this book, approximately 15 minutes, the following will happen: 250 children will die of starvation. 15 people will die of AIDS, 31 will die of malaria and 50 will die of TB. You might ask how this possibly relates to ETs or XETI or the Disclosure Project. It is all connected to control, power, religious ideology, and greed. We know that the technologies have existed, for many years, to alleviate smallpox and polio much earlier, plus the diseases I mentioned above, as well as other ills that plague the world community. We know that technologies have been around that can supply the world with an abundance of energy without using up our valuable natural resources. Unfortunately, The people who have access to these technologies have not shared them with us. I mention this not to depress you, but because it is a reality. Yet it is a reality that can be changed. As you read Hidden Truth, 4, Hidden Knowledge, you will see that changes have already begun in some of the very people who are involved with these technologies, changes that can and will make this a peaceful world. The event marked the launch of the Disclosure Project, an outgrowth of years of effort by the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI. It was also a milestone in my personal journey, having moved from a career as an emergency room doctor living in Asheville, N.C. into a new role, the unlikely courier of a message that is insisting to be heard. It was one more step along the sometimes rocky path I'd stumbled upon as a 9-year-old playing on the streets of Charlotte, North Carolina. A sunny afternoon in 1965 saw me out roaming with the usual group of neighborhood urchins. We were typical southern kids, wandering about in search of all manner of adventure, something to build, or see, or take home. Little were we prepared for what suddenly appeared in the southwest sky, a silver, oval, shaped, gleaming craft, obviously not an airplane or helicopter. It was seamless, totally silent, and unlike anything we'd ever seen. After hovering for a short time, it instantly vanished. We felt this was something truly unusual. My family, predictably, passed off the incident as a childish musing. But my cohorts and I knew we'd seen something way beyond the ordinary. It was my first encounter with an ETV, the term used by the National Security Agency for extraterrestrial vehicles, also commonly known as UFOs. Since that day, my sense of connection to that spacecraft has endured. Events over the next few weeks strengthened that I experienced a series of lucid dreams and night encounters with beings who were not from the Earth. Because I was simply a young boy, I was able to take it all in stride. It seemed a natural result of the incident with my three friends. I believe the ETs were focused on instilling in me an awareness and acceptance of things beyond the world I could see. My innocence allowed me to view this without prejudice, although I didn't speak publicly about it, due to the potential ridicule, until a few years ago. But this early connection was life-altering. It was clearly the dawning of a larger search for truth that grew stronger as I matured. My interest and curiosity about these matters intensified, although I didn't have another direct ET encounter for years. Until around the age of 12, I would collect relevant articles from such magazines as True, Argosy and Life, as well as books about UFO encounters, and accumulated a large stash in my closet. The idea of knowledge of people from other planets enthralled me, and fed into the sense of wonder and joy I felt when looking at the night sky. Fear never entered my mind, it seemed as comfortable as home. So my approach to the idea of extraterrestrials was that their existence is understood, or a given, and that these beings are aware of our evolution on Earth. This sense of familiarity with the great expanse of creation has always induced a sense of joy and peace, even as a pre-schooler. When out in nature, I gained this sense of something awake and divine beyond everyday existence. I believe there was always something, like a hand on my shoulder, helping and guiding me toward a perception of awakeness, a mysterious conscious presence that would open to me when I looked at the sky or played outdoors. There is a Persian expression, the best way to love God is to love His creation. I was blessed with this reality in a very innocent, elemental way. It was an unconventional view of life, perhaps the natural outcome of an equally unconventional childhood. I grew up in a deliciously eccentric southern family. Mother was like Scarlett O'Hara blended with Bette Davis in Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte, mixed with a touch of Joan Crawford's Mommy Dearest. Father was half Native American, his mother a Cherokee. But I was raised in a family that was extremely troubled. Children from such difficult backgrounds generally follow one of two life paths. They either succumb to self-destructive habits and addictions, sometimes to the point of suicide, or find sufficient inner strength to build a meaningful and productive life. I took the latter course, through the grace of God and the intervention of the seen and unseen world. In reality, I have perhaps never known of a more traumatic, dysfunctional family situation than ours. Most people are unaware of this background. They see me as a successful physician and public figure, albeit somewhat eccentric at times, and assume a conventional, normal upbringing. As a young adult, I once attended the movie Mommy Dearest with my twin sister. Afterward, we looked at each other and said, "My God, that would have been the best day of our childhood." People are horrified to hear this. Because of parental alcoholism, and home conditions that often attend it, we children also lived with elements of abandonment, neglect and abuse. I remember, as a little preschooler, eating cigarette ashes, sand, and dirt when nothing else was around. As a medical doctor, I now realize this was at least providing some of the mineral supplements my body needed, one of those instinctual cravings demanded by the body to enable survival. I was frequently very sick, especially every winter, with terrible pneumonias and bronchitis. My lungs still have scar tissue from those bouts. However, blessings often become apparent through hardship. The challenges made me one tough bird. Any bitterness I might have harbored from childhood has dissipated through the realization that this made me strong, a survivor. By the time I reached high school, I vowed to take hold of my life and turn it around, and did. Through some of those years I was actually self-supporting, with my own apartment. I held down a job in a local restaurant, working each night until 1 a.m., then rose at 6 each day to bicycle across the city to school. I managed to maintain an A-grade average, becoming an honor society student involved in numerous school activities. My budding sense of responsibility extended to my three sisters. I often unintentionally referred to them as my daughters, so strong was my protective, caring instinct for them. Having parents who were anti-role models, I learned how not to do things. The challenges brought the realization that we all create our own future, and transcending the limitations of birth, poverty, abuse, or any other hardship is possible through the exertion of human will. I was far too busy during high school to become enthralled with the stuff of pop culture that absorbed many teenagers from the late 60s through early 70s. I simply didn't have access to the luxuries most middle-class kids took for granted, and basic survival was a constant preoccupation. Carousing with drugs and alcohol was out of the question. Instead, I began to read the Vedas, the ancient, sacred literature of India, and study Sanskrit. On my own I learned about meditation and the concept of transcendence, which fit quite comfortably into my psyche. I'd been raised outside the confines of formal religion. My parents did not involve me in church as a child, in fact, they were emphatically atheist. The lack of attachment to an institutional doctrine left me open to ideas that might have been outside the comfort zone of someone growing up in a conventional religious tradition. The result is that I moved naturally into the realm of meditative experiences and higher consciousness, without tutoring from outside parties. I taught myself prayer and meditation, from reading as well as direct experience. These pursuits, coupled with my school involvement in environmental and peace issues, created a new layer of experience and growth and consciousness for me. It was at this point the experience I now call NOM, locality of consciousness, made itself known. When I could find free time, I loved to bicycle out into the countryside seeking this connection. I'd lie in a field, and practice those techniques that had emerged from inside me. I'd find myself traveling to observe other parts of Charlotte, or to see other areas of the earth, or going out into space and seeing it clearly. This became routine. At the age of 15, a beautiful, unstoppable force was opening up inside of me, independent of any sort of tradition. It manifested completely from within. And then, in the spring of 1973, I injured my left thigh. I had made plans to bicycle from Charlotte to the Barrier Islands on the North Carolina coast, a 200-mile trip. I neglected the injury and went ahead with my plans, traveling the entire distance to the coast in one day, then returning to my small efficiency apartment in Charlotte. A horrible infection developed in my leg and spread through my body. I was so sick. Because of a too demanding work and school schedule, I was run down even before this happened. I was also poor, so seeing a doctor was out of the question. As a physician, now I know what happened to me. I became septic, which means my bloodstream was infected, accompanied by a very high fever. There was also skeletal muscle breakdown, overloading my kidneys. All these are potentially fatal symptoms, and I was spiraling to that point, a 17-year-old alone without a phone, trying to nurse myself back to health, not fully understanding the severity of my condition. It brought me to a near-death experience, find, in myself suddenly released from my body. I was carried out into the depths of space, where I already felt at home. Then I experienced what I now understand to be God consciousness, where my individuality became faint as it merged with the effulgent, unbounded, pure, infinite mind. There was no duality. It lasted for what seemed to be an eternity because a normal sense of time disappears in that state of being. I could see all of creation, the vastness of the cosmos, and it was beautiful beyond words. There was nothing frightening about it, only infinite awareness, joy, and the perception of an endless perfect creation. Eventually, two brilliant, scintillating lights approached out of the stars. I now understand them to be avatars, manifestations of God. They were not anthropomorphic or anthropocentric, but appeared as brilliant points of light, pure, conscious energy. These were the twin avatars for our era. As the avatars approached me, I entered a state of oneness with them. It was incredibly beautiful. Then there was a conveyance of knowledge in a pre-verbal form, before and beyond words. It's as if when you say apple, within the word is the actual image of the apple, which could be astral, a light form. And within that conscious image is the pure idea form of the apple itself, its essence. That is how information was being transmitted to me. I have no sense of how long this union with God lasted. I was affected by the beauty of it all, yet very overwhelmed at the same time. Eventually, the episode moved into more of a linear style of communication. One of the avatars said, "You may come with us or return to Earth." I had the presence of mind to ask, "Well, what is your will?" And the being replied, "Well, it's our desire that you go back to Earth to do other things." With that, I became depressed, having no interest at that point in coming back to Earth. I would have been very happy to remain in that state of awareness, in that place of the placeless. But I somehow knew the highest response of human will is acceptance of the divine will, and said, "Okay, then." And with that, I acknowledged their reality and the very exalted celestial beings that exist and the existence of the Godhead and the oneness of creation and divinity. And that's what I experienced, complete, perfect oneness of unbounded mind and creation as one. Then I sort of lost consciousness, and fell back into my body, just sort of whoosh. I was back in my body, but must have been out long enough to lose conscious connection with all of my neural centers, although my senso re-input was working. I remember clearly, as if it's today, seeing the maple tree outside the little apartment, moving in the wind against a street light, but I couldn't move. I thought, "Oh, great. Here I am, back in this messed up body, paralyzed." I truly thought that I had been so damn aged from this severe infection that I'd been paralyzed from a stroke. As it turned out, that was a temporary phenomenon. Today, it is understood that in prolonged near-death experiences it takes some time to be reconnected to the physical body. I then felt a being in the room sent that to test my will to live. It was somewhat frightening, but perhaps a necessary experience that forced me to use my willpower to remain here. There was this force that seemed to be pulling me back out. So I would go back out of my body and then return. I had to exercise volition to remain in my physical body and keep my astral body of light and conscious body integrated with it. and after about half a dozen tries, I nailed it and remained here. I then became fully awake and regained my motor skills. As they say in Britain, I was quite gobsmacked. This experience altered my life like nothing before, changing everything I had been taught, that there was no divine being or conscious existence after the death of the body. I now know from direct experience this is false. God does exist, as do his messengers. For me, nothing would ever be the same. I'd learned that death is not to be feared, that, in fact, there is no death, only a transformation from one state into another. As I got up and reintegrated with the world, I remained in this state of incredible bliss, a rarefied state of higher consciousness where the unbounded quality of cosmic awareness was still awake in me. Enclosed in a room, I could be infinitely aware at the same time. The mystics call this cosmic consciousness, a state I continued to experience some time thereafter. Interestingly, my diseased leg spontaneously healed. I didn't see a doctor or receive antibiotic medication during the entire episode. The experience of communion with God to experiencing cosmic consciousness. I'd found all of this on my own. The absence of religious upbringing was actually a blessing in disguise. I think there's an inverse relationship between religiosity and spirituality, with only a few rare exceptions. Having been spared the religiosity, I could simply search for the truth, without the baggage of embellished doctrines. What happened that fall was an extraordinary amplification of that near-death occurrence about 6 months earlier. I was on Rich's Mountain, about 5,000 feet above the town of Boone. At the top, there was a fire tower at the end of a gravel road that was closed at its base. One crystal clear afternoon, I decided to go to see the sunset from atop this mountain. I reached the top in time to sit in meditation at sunset. Before starting, I glanced towards the southwest and saw an extraterrestrial vehicle. It was some distance away, but was just like the one I had seen as a 9-year-old. For some reason, my reaction at that moment was, it's them again, and I didn't really think much more about it. I simply accepted the fact that they were here. Then the ship winked out, just like the one I'd seen years before. I then began meditating and had a beautiful, deep experience in unbounded mind. Afterward, I opened my eyes and it was pitch dark, with the stars all visible. Imagine being at that altitude in the crystal clear dry air, viewing the Milky Way and countless stars. Standing there, suddenly a thought not my own came to mind: behold what a beautiful universe God has made. With that, I went into the exact state of consciousness I had when I died, that God consciousness where I was fully awake, at one with the entire creation, and yet present standing on the mountain. It was magnificent. When I began the walk down, I noticed a glow off the edge of the mountain and sensed someone was there. Suddenly, on my right, an extraterrestrial biological life form appeared and touched my shoulder so firmly that it was like a strong finger touching me. I looked down and saw the imprint on my jacket. Every hair on my head stood on end. Somewhat childishly, my first thought was, what does this creature want with me? I got down close to the ground, I hate to admit this, in a fetal position, looking up, and he was looking back. Its gender was male. He was quite peaceful and non-threatening, with beautiful, deer-like eyes. Then I suddenly found myself transported onto the craft. We were just out in space, sitting. I recall that the craft became completely translucent. It felt like I was floating in space with nothing around, as if the whole craft was made of fiber optics, and its shell could disappear. Space was visible all around us. So I stayed there with these ETs, who were 3 or 4 feet tall, all with those appealing eyes. It appeared that we were there for one purpose, meditating together. They were interested in me because they wanted contact with a human being experiencing cosmic consciousness as we do, participating with them. At this point I taught them what that state is like for us. We shared it together, an incredible encounter, entirely different from stories usually circulated about extraterrestrial contact. It was a very non-local experience, with time, space, and relativity in a realm unlike what's normal for us.